You are Locked On Vikings, your daily Minnesota Vikings podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Locked On Vikings. I am your host, your pal, and the kid you copied off in math class. My name is Luke Braun. You can find me on Twitter at LukeBraunNFL. You can find the show on Twitter at Locked On Vikings. The show is available anywhere you find your favorite podcasts, like Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Himalaya, whatever you like. Or you can ask your smart device to play podcast Locked On Vikings. And today, I'm going to do something that I've been waiting for a while to do. I haven't had a chance to do a mailbag after the draft. So I asked you guys for your questions. I got a whole bunch of them lined up here. We're also talking to Anthony Wigg of Locked On Jaguars later in the show. So stick around for that as we continue our crossover series here on the Locked On Podcast Network. This episode, this week, this whole crossover thing, this whole month is brought to you by Built Bar. Diving right in, the first question comes from Joe Schneider, who asks, over under 10.5 of the draft picks making the active roster. So short answer, I think that's an easy over, but I'm going to go through the math here just to kind of back up my case. So I think you have seven who are automatic. Jeff Gladney, Justin Jefferson, Ezra Cleveland, Cameron Dantzler, Troy Dye, DJ Wonnum, and James Lynch, all taken in the first four rounds. You can pretty much consider that automatic. It's very, very rare. You see one on one team every like 3 years of a fourth round pick or higher not making the original roster, and usually there's some extenuating circumstance like Jalachi Polite, or you know, when it was Willie Beavers with the Vikings. You can usually kind of see it coming, and none of those guys really raise any of those alarms. So you got seven right there. I think right now the Vikings only have four safeties under contract, and two rookies, Josh Metellus and Brian Cole, are two of those. You could count Harrison Hand as a fifth. He's listed on the Vikings website as a corner if you wanted to move him, but either way, that is another rookie, so you're guaranteed two of those guys are going to make the roster. The Vikings always go into the roster with four safeties. So that is that brings us up to nine. It'll be tough for the offensive linemen, Blake Brandel and Kyle Hinton. However, you have Kyle Osborne. He's got a pretty good chance at the roster as a punt returner. You have Kenny Willekes. I think he's just good enough to make the team. I like his odds in a battle against like Anthony Zettel or Eddie Yarborough. And while I don't think either of the linemen, I don't think Blake Brandel or Kyle Hinton, I don't think Nate Stanley makes it, I still acknowledge that they have a decent enough chance to prove me wrong. So if just two of those prove me wrong, then you hit the over. The next question is along the same lines. It comes from Wade French, who says, who do you predict the day one starters for the Vikings will be from this draft class? And I think similarly, a lot of it has to do with round taken is going to be kind of your indicator, right, of how high the Vikings are on these players. I think Jeff Gladney, easy day one starter, who's going to beat him out, Holden Hill. Chris Boyd, like, come on. Justin Jefferson, again, who's going to beat him out? Tajay Sharp, BC Johnson, I don't think so. I think he's immediately the second best wide receiver on the team and therefore will be a starter. I know people say, oh, but he's just a slot, but I think he'll probably get more, he'll probably get the second most snaps, the second most routes. Where on the field he actually lines up for those is more of a strategic decision and less of a usage one. I think Ezra Cleveland has a great chance to be a day one starter. We'll see if that's at left tackle or left guard or if they move Riley Reiff into left guard, but I think Riley Reiff and Ezra Cleveland in some order will be the left side of the offensive line. I'd actually be kind of surprised if Pat Elflein ended up starting. It would probably bode poorly for Ezra Cleveland, though, you know, rookies starting day one with COVID-19 and what's probably going to be a weird training camp is something that you'll probably have to keep in mind. And those are the easy ones. I think Cameron Dantzler will probably compete with Holden Hill for a starting job, which, again, I don't think is ideal. I think you should bring in a veteran to kind of give that a baseline, give them both somebody, you know, experienced to beat. But I also don't know if Dantzler wins that competition, so I wouldn't say he's a day one starter for sure, but he has a shot. And I actually think James Lynch has a decent chance to beat out Shamar Stephen at three technique if he can pass rush, if he can be disruptive, and if he can learn how to not get washed away in the run game as much. The next one comes from Matthew Snow. A lot of people ask kind of about this. How do you see the Dalvin Cook extension playing out? So here's the information we have right now. Dalvin Cook, it appears, is not going to hold out. That tells me that he expects a contract to get done and feels optimistic about it. The team, in all of their public appearances, have said, you know, we want to extend him. We understand that it's a business. You know, we're going to do our best here and essentially say, hey, we're going to try to work out a deal that's fair, but we want to extend him. Dalvin Cook wants to stay. Everybody wants this. So I think an extension will happen. The actual amount, I'm going to, I guess, hold comment until I see the amount, and then we'll kind of see what how we feel about it there, because of all of the idea of, you know, paying a running back a whole bunch of money is, of course, a controversial thing. But I think it'll get done in training camp like normal. You know, you'll see it in around July. Maybe in the middle of the season, if COVID-19 delays some things, I'm sure that'd be fine. But it doesn't sound like Dalvin Cook is going to hold out. Moving on, Eric Russell says, why are the Vikings so good at scouting and developing the D-line, but don't have the same success with the O-line? And I think the answer to that is Andre Patterson. Andre Patterson's a good talent scout. Every time Mike Zimmer has basically blindly trusted him, like, it works out all the time. He's been able to develop guys for decades in this league. I mean, go all the way back to John Randall, who he vouched for, and, I mean, bring it all the way up to Robeson and Everson Griffin and now Hunter, and now Ifeanyi Udenebo looks like his latest swan song. Stephen Weatherly, 7th-round pick, just got a $6.5 million deal. He's just good at this, and the Vikings don't really have an equivalent to Andre Patterson on the offensive line. They had Jeff Davidson for the longest time. I think he kind of flamed out of Minnesota when Matt Khalil busted. Of course, if you can't, you know, a guy who's such a can't-miss prospect, Matt Khalil was, and if he doesn't develop, you know, of course that's going to reflect poorly on the O-line coach, and then it's been a carousel ever since, going through Sperano, and then he passed away, and then Andrew Janoco, and now they have Rick Dennison, who I actually think is decent at this, but I think the answer is in the position coaching, for sure. Along a similar line, Skull SRT asks, why didn't the Vikings address the G position in the draft guard position? And what are the chances Lynch starts at DT, 13.5 sacks in 1 year? The position is impressive. The second one I just kind of talked about, so we'll just focus on the first one. Why didn't the Vikings address the guard position in the draft? And I guess I would respond to that by saying, show me which guard they should have taken when instead, right? And I think you actually can find some decent answers to this. I thought Natane Muti is somebody that I liked that was available to them when they, in the fourth and I think even fifth round, maybe even sixth, you know, when they were picking guys like KJ Osborne, guys that, you know, were basically going to be backups, Josh Metellus is going to be a backup, and they could have gotten somebody that actually had a chance to start who had fallen a little further in the draft. I know Muti had some medicals that I guess they didn't want to touch, and that I guess makes sense when you can't do the usual amount of homework on it, so you can't exactly know the kind of risk you're taking. But I think the general answer here is there wasn't really a great opportunity. They weren't going to pick, you know, a guard like Robert Hunt over Justin Jefferson or Jeff Gladney. You know, they weren't going to pick a guard over Ezra Cleveland, where tackles probably much more important need along that line that's worth prioritizing. And, you know, the way the board falls, and I've said this before the draft and I'll repeat it now, the way the board falls should dictate your draft strategy more than the positions that you need should. You know, if you pick, the Vikings picked a wide receiver first and a cornerback second, that doesn't necessarily mean they think wide receiver is most important and cornerback is next most important. That just means they were high enough on Justin Jefferson to take him over anybody else, and then they were high enough on Jeff Gladney to take him over everybody else. They might not even think that wide receiver is more important than a center or a left tackle, but they were responding to who was available on the board and trying to maximize their value that way. Let me give you an extreme example. Say you really, really badly need a defensive tackle, or say an edge rusher. You really badly need an edge rusher and you really badly need a quarterback. And let's say you drafted 8th or 9th in this draft, so all the good quarterbacks were gone. You'd either have to reach really, really hard to pick Jordan Love, or pick your edge rusher now, wait till the second round, and try to get, you know, Jordan Love or something like that. Isn't that a better strategy than, like, reaching and then getting a, you know, getting the same quarterback you would have gotten anyways, reaching on him, and then getting a worse edge rusher versus, you know, just take, like, I don't even know much about the edge rusher, you know, take Kevon Chiasson, what was that guy's name? And then see what you can do in the second round with quarterback. Just seems like a way that maximizes your value and gets more in sum, in total. So I guess that's why they didn't address the guard position. And, you know, you could also argue that they did address the guard position by getting Ezra Cleveland, and somebody's going to move inside, and it ups the chances that somebody who isn't Pat Elflein is going to play at left guard. And also, they're really, really high on Drew Samia, so maybe he's just going to be the right guard, and maybe they feel really confident in that, even though we, as fans, haven't really had the chance to see much. So, before we move on to the rest of these questions and to the Locked On Jaguars crossover, this episode is brought to you by Built Bar. Built Bar is a breakfast snack bar. It's chocolatey, it's delicious. The flavor of it's really nice, you know, especially in the morning. I don't usually like something too sweet, and it's definitely not too sweet. It's like this nice, rich, chocolatey flavor. They have all kinds of different flavors. They have a peanut one, they've got like an orange one, they've got a raspberry one, they've got a caramel one, and all kinds of, they sent me a sampler, so I've been able to kind of try them throughout the week. They're good for you, and they are are kind of that sweet guilty treat that you don't have to feel too guilty about. So if you go to BuiltBar.com right now, that's where you can order some for yourself. And when you check out, you can enter promo code Locked On to get 10% off of your first order. That's BuiltBar.com, promo code Locked On. Sticking with the guard topic, Joe Phillips asks, are there any examples of someone playing guard as a rookie and then moving to tackle and being successful there? Concerned about this for Ezra. And the answer is yes. So Laremy Tunsil is one. Lael Collins is one. There's another one I'm thinking. Connor Williams, I believe. I actually think he just stayed at guard. But he was another like tackle inside to guard prospect. So it definitely does happen. With regard to Ezra, I think it should encourage you that the Vikings aren't priced into doing this. Because, and Arif Hassan kind of changed my mind on this. I'm usually really, really against people who are used to playing one position and just shoving them into another position all willy-nilly. Because it's a difficult transition to make. And it comes with a cost, and I feel like people often treat it like it's costless. Move him outside. Switch Brian O'Neill to left tackle, it'll be fine. And it is something that carries a cost, but I think in this particular situation, the cost of Riley Reiff minus whatever he loses for moving a guard is still probably better than Pat Elflein. So in this particular situation, I actually would favor it. And that means that Ezra never has to do it. It has worked out in the past, and if he does do it, it means that they've chosen that he's going to be a better guard than Riley Reiff moving inside to guard, and Riley Reef's skill set lends itself pretty well to moving inside to guard. So that should be encouraging for you. That means that they're pretty high on the idea of Ezra Cleveland at guard, and maybe he just stays there. Maybe he moves outside to tackle when Riley Reiff goes. You can kind of play that by ear as you go, but I wouldn't be too concerned about that. Another one from Joe Phillips asks, do you think Courtney Davis is going to be our wide receiver 3 and our future wide receiver 2 after Thielen? Short answer, no, I don't think so. I think that whoever the future after Thielen is, it'll be Justin Jefferson and whoever, is probably not on the roster yet. Courtney Davis is somebody who similarly to, he doesn't pair very well with Justin Jefferson because they both have release issues off of the line of scrimmage and therefore are both served well by being put into the slot. And that is not something you can really support with two players who need that. Now, Adam Thielen is good in the slot because the slot corners usually aren't good enough to cover Adam Thielen. But if you put him outside, it's not like he has a release issue. It's not like you have to put him in the slot to hide an issue. It's just, it was a favorable matchup because everybody had like their Perry Nickerson that couldn't keep up. So you can put Adam Thielen outside and then Jefferson in the slot. I imagine that's what you're going to see. I don't know if you can necessarily, if you had like Courtney Davis and Justin Jefferson, facilitate that. And I also just don't think he's the third best receiver on the roster right now. I think Tajay Sharp and BC Johnson are both better receivers than Courtney Davis. You have to be able to release off the line of scrimmage. You didn't see a lot of deep route running at Texas A&M. So you have a huge unknown there. And I'm kind of treating him like I would treat any other undrafted free agent wide receiver. I think he fell out of the draft for a reason. Probably shouldn't have fallen all the way out of the draft, but let's not pretend like we got a second round player here. Trent Noop says, who are your way too early surprise cuts? I've kind of alluded to this already a little bit. I think actually Pat Elflein might be a surprise cut. If he's not being tasked to start, he can play guard and center, which makes him a valuable backup. And he is valued by the team more highly than Brett Jones, who can only play center and who can't run block. But I think that maybe it might just be time to move on with him if he doesn't retain his left guard position. Shamar Stephan is an idea, although I think they like that he's a good run stopper, and you don't really get that with James Lynch, so I don't see that as a particularly likely one. But here's my answer. It's Rashad Hill. And I like Rashad Hill. I think he's a good backup tackle. I think he's on the verge of being a starting quality tackle. So I'm not saying that he's secretly unrosterable or anything like that. He's definitely rosterable. But looking at the tackle group, you have Oli Udoh, who somebody asks about him later. Oli Udoh, who might take that swing tackle job from him if he plays well enough. You have Brian O'Neill, Riley Reiff, and Ezra Cleveland at tackle. If Ezra Cleveland or Riley Reiff moves inside, you have room for Rashad Hill. But let's say that that doesn't happen. You have four tackles, and one of Oli Udoh or Rashad Hill is going to be the fifth one who you might not want to or need to facilitate a roster spot for. And I could actually see Oli Udoh winning that competition and Rashad Hill, being sent to go somewhere else in free agency. And I think whoever gets him gets a good backup for on the cheap and gets a great deal. But that's going to be my surprise cut call. I don't know if that's too likely either. Knox Brown asks, if you were Vegas, what odds would you put on each of the following? A Griffin return, a Klein return, a Denard signing. So a Griffin return, I think, is pretty much out of the cards. I'd put really high odds on it. a Klein signing, I would put lower odds on. Like, for a Griffin return, it's like plus 2,000. I think it's pretty much done. I know people have said, like, never say never, and so it's not a 0%, but it's like a 1%. So it's still not high. With a Klein return, I actually think the longer time goes on, the more likely that becomes. Though, I don't think the Vikings are too interested in it. I think Klein would, but I don't think the Vikings would. I mean, they've sung Samia's praises so much over this offseason. I think they're just going with Drew Samia, and we'll see if that works out. So I would put that, you know, like a plus 1,000. And a Denard signing, I think a cornerback signing, I would put at like plus 200, like a decently, I mean, not more than 50% that they'll go out and get another person with where their cap is and stuff. But I think it's there. It being specifically Denard is difficult because there's other options. Logan Ryan just informed the Titans he's not coming back. Drake Kirkpatrick is out there. So specifically Denard is going to be really, really difficult, like plus 1,500. Them signing a corner at all, I'm actually going to get even more. I'd say like minus 110, like a 50-50 shot that they actually go out and sign a veteran corner. Infinite Rebuilds asks, can Udo be a starting O-line this year? Seems like no one is taking him seriously, but he played well against the Bears. And I don't think starting, because, I mean, you've got Ezra Cleveland, Riley Reiff, Brian O'Neill, and I don't think Udo's beating out any of those guys. But as, like, the swing tackle, which is an important role, yeah, absolutely. I think he could win that in preseason, like I've already talked about. Jason Peterson asks, with Jameis Winston signing to be the backup quarterback in New Orleans, how can Minnesota justify a win-now mentality by keeping Sean Mannion as their backup, paying him practically the same amount? Whatever's surrounded Jameis Winston this year with the LASIK and all that was really weird. So that's obviously a factor there. I've explained Sean Mannion a million times. He makes Kirk Cousins better, you know, to use like Madden ratings as an allegory. If Kirk Cousins is an 85 without Sean Mannion, but a 90 with him, perhaps it's worth taking a little bit of extra risk and sacrificing a good insurance policy for turning your starting quarterback from an 85 into a 90. That's a super oversimplified way of doing it. I've explained it a bunch of times on the show though. So you can go look at, you know, previous mailbags. You'll probably find it. Stizo asks, with the drafting of Dye, do you see Eric Wilson being cut before the start of the year? If Dye looks good in camp and Gedeon is back healthy, Wilson has a cap hit of $3.2 million and no dead money if cut. So I don't think that cap has a lot to do with it when it comes to roster cutdown decisions. I don't think they're trying to say, ooh, we can you know, save a little cap here. No, I think that they're usually making those decisions based on how somebody played. It's really difficult, I think, to convince an NFL coach to say, yeah, that guy outplayed that guy, but look at the cap space, you could say. Like, you can't put cap space on the field. They're going to get the best players. And I don't think Eric Wilson ends up being on the outside end of this linebacker group. He might be fifth if he loses out to Gedeon and Dye, which I think is possible, but fifth still makes the team. Brandon Miller says, if I'm looking at the NFC North, something is telling me the Lions are taking this division this year. This is crazy, right? Yeah, that's completely insane. Jeff Teed asks, what is one thing the Vikes need to do before the season and one thing they definitely should not do? My need, bring in a vet at guard. My don't, move Reef to guard. I think bringing in a vet at guard's a good idea. Like I said earlier, moving Reef to guard's okay. I think need to do is pick up a veteran corner, like a Drake Kirkpatrick, Darquise Denard, Logan Ryan would be the white whale. And one thing they definitely should not do, I'm going to say give a giant extension to Dalvin Cook. I'm open to extending Dalvin Cook, probably for a higher number than most are. I'd go up to like 9-10 million on him a year, but if they, you know, do what they did with Christian McCaffrey and we're paying him $15 million a year to be the running back, then I definitely don't think they should do that. So that's all the questions that I have for now. There were more asked, so thank you guys for everybody who asked. You can, of course, ask me questions at Lockdown Vikings, at Luke Braun NFL, anytime. If I don't answer them on the show, I'll probably answer them by taking a screenshot of your question and tweeting about it, or I'll answer it straight away like that. So, you know, don't be shy, send me your questions. But for now, I'm going to back off and give the floor up to this interview with Anthony Wigg of Locked On Jaguars. So enjoy that. Okay, it turns out that I lied to you. Quick change of plans. The interview with Locked On Jaguars, and we're actually going to talk to Locked On Colts as well, all on tomorrow's show because of the way the scheduling worked out. This works out better, and I went way long with the mailbag anyways, so I have no issues pushing that to tomorrow when I can do it and it won't be like a crazy long podcast. So we'll have two crossovers tomorrow. In the meantime, we have a little bit of a chance and I can dive a little bit deeper into something that a lot of people asked about, which is a Dalvin Cook extension. So I only answered one question about it. Somebody asked, you know, hey, how do you think it's going to go down? I said, I'm pretty sure the Vikings are going to extend him. It'll probably get done in training camp like it always does. And I feel pretty confident saying that, you know, it's probably going to happen. But I had a discussion about this right before, I believe it was right before free agency, about Dalvin Cook getting extended and, you know, whether or not they should, whether or not they can, you know, how does it look for the cap situation? Somebody asked, another person asked, hey, does Ezra Cleveland mean drafting Ezra Cleveland mean, you know, we're not going to extend Dalvin Cook because he has chemistry with Alexander Mattison. I don't think that that's, the way that you should interpret the drafting of Ezra Cleveland, because Ezra Cleveland would be very good for Dalvin Cook if Dalvin Cook were to stay. So it doesn't necessarily suggest, a desire to move on from Dalvin Cook. But I guess I can reiterate this for people who have joined the podcast since then, if you found me during draft season or whatever. Essentially, here's the deal. In the world of analytics, there is a very, very prominent meme, almost, this very prominently featured idea and hypothesis that running backs don't matter. That is to say, it doesn't matter who your running back is. If you have Damian Williams, who's actually a really bad running back, if you look at his statistics, he wasn't very good at breaking tackles. He was not very good at like production over expectation. And the analytical case for Damian Williams is that he was very poor, but the Chiefs won the Super Bowl. And then you have a guy like Derrick Henry, and essentially the argument with a guy like Derrick Henry or a guy like Dalvin Cook, who everybody sees as, you know, ooh, like carrying the franchise, the bell cow, is that anybody can get similar production. And I think if you think about it logically, I think that's more compelling than looking at the analytic case. Not that the analytic case is incorrect, it absolutely is correct. And the analytic case is basically that, hey, if you look at teams and rank them based on how good their running back is, you're not going to have a very accurate picture of who the best teams in the league are. You won't even have a very accurate picture of who the best running games in the league are by ranking teams by how good their running backs are. That's at the crux of the analytic case. But I think in the logical case, to me, that one is more compelling and makes a little bit more sense, because if you think about the anatomy of a run play from, you know, kind of step to step, the offensive line has to do their job first, right? They have to block first. It doesn't matter if you have Barry Sanders in his prime. If there's a linebacker all over him at the handoff point, it's very, very unlikely that that play is going to go anywhere. So you have to block first. And because the blocking point, the did the offensive line block well enough question is answered before the question of did the running back do his job well, that kind of means that the offensive line's, anytime the offensive line fails, it renders the running back's talent moot. And the flip side is true too. When the offensive line does its job really well and opens a huge hole, so long as your running back isn't an idiot that can't find the hole like Trent Richardson was, you know, famously, so long as your running back is at quote unquote replacement level, which is a shorthand for somebody in the bottom quarter of the league, but isn't like a crazy outlier. So long as you have a replacement level running back, they can run through that hole. Anybody can run through that hole. It's just open grass. It doesn't take any actual skill to run through a hole that's been opened for you. And there's a lot of tertiary stuff. You know, there's the idea that, you know, what about like physically grinding down the defense, you know, if you have, or play action. The biggest one is that the analytical case is that play action isn't predicated on whether or not your running game is good, which sounds counterintuitive. You know, obviously a defense should fear a running game more if it's a running game that should be feared, but I think a way to put that is that, you know, if you have to like quote unquote establish the run before you can run play action, the run has been established since 1919. That is to say, defenses are never going to go into a play unless it's 3rd and 10 or whatever. Defenses are rarely going to go into a play and say, nah, this isn't a run play. Their running back sucks. That's just not a thought that that defenders have. And if you ask defenders, hey, when you are trying to figure out if it's a run or a pass, what are you looking at? None of them, zero of them, will tell you, well, it depends on how good the running back is. No, they're reading keys, they're reading formations, they're thinking about film study, they're looking, you know, watching looks, they're watching offensive line steps. And so the key to play action, and Kirk Cousins will tell you this, so I'm citing him here, not my stupid ass, but Kirk Cousins will tell you that the key to play action is selling it. If your offensive lineman can fake it, if your quarterback can fake it well enough, if your running back can fake it well enough, you can fool the defense. And if you're good at faking it, but not necessarily good at the real thing, you're still going to have a good play action game. And that's something that Kirk Cousins has said out loud a couple of times in press conferences. You can go look him up if you want. So that's the general argument against extending a running back. That's why everybody roasts the Panthers when they spent $16 million on Christian McCaffrey. And that's why everybody says, you know, hey, you know, if they give, if now that Dalvin Cook is going to need, you know, $16, $17 million a year or something like that, you know, hey, should we even do this? So here's where I stand. I think that the way to kind of to plant your flag, to define your stance on this is to name your dollar amount, right? Everybody would take Dalvin Cook at $4 million a year. Nobody would take Dalvin Cook at $18 million a year. I think, or I don't know, I don't want to speak for all of you. Maybe you would take Dalvin Cook at $18 million a year. Lord knows we were arguing about it with Adrian Peterson a couple of years ago, and the cap's gone up quite a bit since then. So maybe you would, but I wouldn't take Dalvin Cook at $18 million. You wouldn't take Dalvin Cook at $30 million a year, right? Like at a certain point, it becomes ridiculous and everybody would unanimously say no. So at some point between $4 million and $30 million, there comes a line where you're no longer happy with the deal. For me, that line is about $9 or $10 million. That's about 5% of the salary cap. It's about what you're going to be spending on like a decent defensive tackle, on a decent off-ball linebacker, and other kind of like smaller, you know, every down starter type positions, but ones that have a lot less impact on the play. You know, typically making less, that's still making less than like a guard, and I think that that's appropriate. And I don't think realistically Dalvin Cook is going to make $10 million or less. He's going to be more expensive than that if I had to guess, which means that I guess if I had to say definitively with no nuance or context, am I for it or against it? I'm against it. That doesn't mean I think Dalvin Cook is bad. I think he's one of the best running backs in the league. I'd call him top two along with Christian McCaffrey right now. But I think there is the whole positional value argument and just the idea of does it actually matter to have a Dalvin Cook, or is 90% of the stuff you get from Dalvin Cook something Alexander Mattison can do as well? And that's, I think, where the argument breaks down. Now, other running backs, like I think Austin Eckler at $6 million a year is a slight but not egregious overpay, and I think that's true for most running backs. So paying Dalvin Cook $9 or $10 million, I think makes me one of the higher people on Dalvin Cook in terms of the actual dollar amount you would say. But personally, I think if you're starting to get into the $12, $13, $14 million a year range, I think that's kind of insane. And I think the Vikings are probably willing to spend more than I would be, and they're probably willing to spend more than you would too on Dalvin Cook. I know they're very high on Dalvin Cook. They say a lot that you have to establish a run to do the play action, even though I don't think Kirk Cousins himself agrees. I think Gary Kubiak and Mike Zimmer, two older school coaches, are going to agree with that. And we'll see, you know, I mean, they're going to put their money where their mouth is, right? And then we'll really see how they feel about the whole thing. And that's why I kind of reserve most of my judgment for when I see the dollar amount. If the dollar amount's going to be around 9 or 10, I'm fine with it. I can make my peace with it. I can make my peace with it up to a certain amount. But if they're starting to, I mean, if they pay him what Christian McCaffrey made, then I think that that's irresponsible. And I think that that's a misallocation of their resources. So that is going to do it for today's episode of Locked On Vikings. If you want a real treat, go make sure you listen to yesterday's. I actually talked to Vikings undrafted free agent Brady Aiello. Awesome conversation with him. It was really cool. Also talked to Locked On Texans and Locked On Titans this week. Tomorrow, I will be talking to Locked On Jags, Locked On Colts, and we'll do something else for the third segment. I haven't figured that out yet, but we'll definitely get those crossovers in for you. Sorry about the scheduling kerfuffle and all the confusion. A little bit of a tease there, but I guess you have a reason to listen tomorrow. In the meantime, you can find me on Twitter at LukeBraunNFL. Show's on Twitter at Locked On Vikings, so you can find me anywhere you find your favorite podcasts, or just ask your smart device to play podcast Locked On Vikings. Stay safe out there, everybody, and as always, Skol.